Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the program host, guest, or participants, and not necessarily those of KKRN Community Radio and Acorn Community Enterprises, or the underwriters of this station. Welcome to Enjoy Exceptional Living. I am Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. This program is in collaboration with Enjoy Magazine, KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio, and myself. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. Today we have in the studio three individuals that are going to talk about the topic of the role of faith in civil action and politics. We have with us today Tim Garman, Reverend Tim Garman, who's with the Happy Valley Community Church, Reverend Megan Owens, who's the Pilgrim Congregational United Church of Christ in Reading, and Reverend Bob Schwartz, St. James Lutheran Church, Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. I want to welcome all three of you, and I really appreciate the fact that you've shown up to have this dialogue. I think it's an important dialogue. When we look across our nation today, we see a lot of unrest, division. We see millions are going to the streets. We have the issues of fake news that has come up in recent years. We see it's political leaders and others lying, you know, telling false lies, false information, and it's hard to distinguish what's going on. The current administration in January was working in Minnesota about immigration enforcement. That's what they called it, immigration enforcement. Renee Nicole Good, a 37-year-old U.S. citizen, a mother of three, was shot and killed by the Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents. Then Julio Cesar Sosa Celis was shot and wounded also in January of 2026. Alex Preti, an ICU nurse in a veterans hospital, was fatally shot by Border Patrol. So there are huge incidences around immigration and what is transpiring with federal agencies. So I'd like to hear, when you hear that going on as a faith leader, what comes up for you? How do you work with it in your community? So I'm going to start with you, Tim, on this question. When you hear all these reports of things going on, how do you deal with that?
First of all, it's really hard, Lynn. You hear stories come out like that. As a faith leader, you try to balance, you know, those type of topics and politics from the pulpit, and it's almost impossible, especially if you have a church where you have far-right extremists and far-left extremists attending your church, and all should be welcome. But when you hear stories like that, if you're afraid to say something as a faith leader, when you see something so obviously wrong, then we are failing our society. The trick is just, how do we balance it? And I don't know how to balance it. I try. We all try.
It's a challenge,
but,
isn't it?
It's a challenge. But when you see something so obviously wrong, we have to say something. And we just can't allow that to go on. And there was they called that what's the term you use with that, what the government called that?
Immigration enforcement?
Thank you. It was more like immigration control. It was not enforcement.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was way beyond enforcement that we've ever seen in the past.
Yes, yes. How about you, Bob Schwartz?
One of the things that I try to do with the people in my congregation is to shift their lens from a primarily political lens to a theological lens. Once we are in the church, we are not partisans for Democrats or Republicans or libertarians or socialists. If I am a partisan, I'm a partisan for Jesus. And so I have to start there. So that does necessarily touch on what's happening in the world today. I try to frame what we talk about as, you know, we are not talking about political issues. We're talking about theological issues. We're talking about who God is. We're talking about who human beings are. We're talking about human dignity being made in the image and likeness of God. We're talking about balancing the needs of all people with the needs of those who are most vulnerable. And we're always doing this. Our society has labeled some specific things political and other things not political. And in some ways, the churches are left with the scraps of that, because we have been trained to think that if something is political, then the wide range of views that people hold are all equally valid because it's politics. But theology limits those options to me, because I don't get to start from there and assume that my position is valid because it's a position held by other people of a particular party. And so I have to do my best to explain to people that you have to set aside partisanship and ideology, and you have to start with God revealed in Jesus. And where does our understanding of who God is for us, where does that lead us into the world and into what we do and say?
Thank you. I want to hear from Reverend Megan Owens from Pilgrim Congregation United Church of Christ. And then I want to touch upon theology kind of limits things, like he was making that comment. So Megan, the original question about dealing with issues like that.
Well, for me, I have to think about what my congregation expects, and sometimes they get it and sometimes they don't, but they expect me to speak to those things. And I also feel that there are many social issues in the country that have been politicized. So you can't preach the gospel without crossing some of that boundary, because the gospel, I'm sorry, will touch political issues, because Jesus was political, mm-hmm. meaning Jesus spoke to certain social injustices. Jesus spoke to the abuse of authority and power. Jesus spoke to these things in a way that still operate in the world today. So when I'm preaching, I feel I have an obligation to also speak to those things through a lens very similar to what Bob was talking about, that is calls me to say, who is God over and against what's happening here? And also to call out what I feel is ethically wrong. It is wrong for government agents, whoever is in power at the time, to go sweeping through a city as a revenge against the governor of that state. And I'm sorry, Lynn, that's what was happening in my mind. And I think that I'm not going to say that the current administration is the only one that has done that. So I'm going to put it that way, too. It's not a one-sided thing that happens. But when that happens, I feel obligated to say that is simply wrong to treat people in that way. I also know that, you know, I learned from this from Benedictine Sisters in Indianapolis, where they say simply, we aim to greet everyone that comes to us as we would greet Christ. And I also try to operate in that way when you think about who is welcome and how they're welcome. And it's not about pleasing. It's a delicate balance, as Tim was mentioning.
Yes. So what I want to ask you further about that, all of you, in your communities, when these things were occurring, it sounds like, Megan, you spoke to it directly and said, this isn't okay. How did you handle
that? I'm a little more subtle in the pulpit than I am right now, but I'm spicy, as you know. And in a radio interview, I'm just going to lay it out. But in the pulpit, I honestly try to couch it in a way that's broader, in a way that feels like I am preaching hope. That's what I try to do. I try to preach hope, even when I don't feel it. And that's where I start. What is the word of hope? My congregation is coming in worn out, tired, cranky, because they're stressed out, because we pretend that what's happening in the world doesn't affect us personally, which we all know isn't true. And I think I So I angle it through the text that I'm using. I angle it through this theological framework. And really often I just say, look, this is not new. This is what Jesus was speaking to. This is what we're living today. This is what the prophets were speaking to in the exile. This is what we're living today. So I don't, but I will say, you know, if we live for justice, there are certain rules we live by, and what might that mean? But I try to be gentle about it.
Yeah, yeah. Supportive. Find a supportive way of addressing the issues.
Yeah.
You don't want to add to the burden.
Yeah, because I feel like my job from the pulpit is to preach a word of hope, preach a word of how does this affect my life, send my people into the week feeling like they can get through that week.
Yes. Bob, your thoughts on it?
Oftentimes when I am stepping into the pulpit to talk about things like this, I have to keep in mind that because of the atomization, the fracturing of society, people that come into the church don't even necessarily have the same facts about things that have happened. And so I find that I often have to frame or reframe or unframe, whatever word you want to use, I have to offer some framework for what is actually happening.
Clarity.
And sometimes that requires stepping back from the thing that is happening so that I can put that in context. Several weeks ago, we referred to, as a Lutheran, I am part of the One Holy Catholic and Apostolic Church. And I say that with a lowercase c, because Catholic means universal, which means that we are part of the 2,000-year tradition of the church. And so we have things in common with other churches that we are not formally connected with because of the nature of that relationship. And so I used the recent spat, I'm not sure if you can call it a spat, somewhat one-sided, between the president and the pope. And so it had to be reframed, not as a spat, as an argument, but we reframed it as the pope is saying things that the church has believed for over 1,000 years, things that the Lutheran church brought with us out of the Reformation, the idea of just war and so on and so forth. And the president publicly opposes the pope. And we see American Christians rushing to defend the government and not their church, which has not changed its views about these things in centuries. And so why is that the case? And it's a matter of that reframing away from an argument between two people and into a discussion of, what do we actually believe? Do we know what we actually believe? Much of the modern American church just runs on vibes. And when we run into issues like this, that that problem is revealed in its glory. Do we actually believe the things that we say we believe? How far are we willing to act as if we believe them?
And are we living that?
Yes.
Yes, yes. So Reverend Tim Garman from Happy Valley Community, how do you work with that?
It's hard. This day and age, it seems like we live in a world of hate instead of a world of love. It's just so easy to hate on anybody you don't agree with, whether it's politics, religion, or any other aspect in life. Look at the road rage incidents. People are just so angry anymore. And I don't think we're raising our kids to love. I think we're raising our kids to hate. And it makes it really hard. And, you know, John 13:34, Jesus gave us a command. A new command I give you. Love one another. As I have loved you, you must so love the world. he didn't specify one group of people over another. It's everybody. It was very obvious that Jesus loves the world, and he commanded us to do the same, and we are falling short. So in our church, that is a topic I preach a lot, is love, and we have to accept everybody. I don't care if you're an immigrant walking through the door. I don't care if you're a gay couple walking through that door. I don't care if you're a druggie walking through that door. They are all welcome to come and sit in our pews and listen to a sermon, because wouldn't Jesus go to them? We as ministers or pastors, we are called to follow that and that example that he gave us. And yes, it's hard at times when things get real political, but we have to balance it, and we have to make sure everybody feels welcome one way or another.
Yes. If you just tuned in, this is a segment of Enjoy Exceptional Living. I am Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. This program is in collaboration with Enjoy Magazine, KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio, and myself. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. I also want to mention, because of the content of this program, I'm also an ordained minister with the Centers for Spiritual Living, which is a New Thought tradition. And I invited these individuals into conversation because of the things that are transpiring in our nation, and we're examining the role that faith plays in civil action and in politics. So we have as guests today, Reverend Tim Garman with Happy Valley Community Church, Reverend Megan Owens, Pilgrim Congregation, United Church of Christ in Reading, Reverend Bob Schwartz with the St. James Lutheran Church, which is the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. And so there's so much going on, and it sounds like all three of you are very mindfully wrestling with it, trying to bring accuracy when you're dealing with these things that are transpiring in our nation to your communities and support them in how to apply their faith, how to work with it. I think it's interesting. Dr. King, Martin Luther King Jr., was talking about nonviolence. His quote is, this is just amazing to me, nonviolence is the answer to the crucial political and moral questions of our time. This is what he stated. The need for man to overcome oppression and violence without resorting to oppression and violence. And I think that's our challenge. And when you think about anything else you want to mention about the immigration situation, I mean, from your faith tradition, we'll start with you, Bob. Do you think that the gospel teaches to welcome immigrants? And there are such things as legal immigrants and illegal immigrants. So how can you, what would you like? I'm not going to ask all three of you that same question.
Absolutely. We are supposed to welcome immigrants. It's one of the strongest themes through the scriptures. This speaks kind of to the question of what is political and what is not political, because this has been relegated to the realm of political in our society, along with economic questions, although those two things are spoken of much, much more in the Bible than the bedroom issues that are usually treated as theological footballs for people to throw around. I take some pride in the fact that many of the people who spoke out and were in the streets in Minnesota were good Lutherans. There are a lot of Lutherans from the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America in Minnesota. And so they recognized that that injustice, and were willing to go out and put themselves in the middle of it, put themselves in that situation to speak to that injustice. As a Lutheran, I am part of the tradition that actually Martin Luther spoke about the separation of church and state. He called it the two kingdoms, because in that time, kingdoms was what he could use to talk about governments. But it means that the government has specific functions and the church has specific functions. and the church is a prophetic voice to the government, and the government carries out actions for the good of all the people. And so what that means to me is the government can, our leaders can do, can carry out the will of the people to the manner that, to the manner that is appropriate, but to the manner that is appropriate. And if we decide to change the definition of what is legal or what is illegal in regard to anything, then the government can do that, but that does not change how we should act, which is with compassion and with understanding and with the knowledge that every person bears the divine image. And so whatever definition for immigration that people want to come up with, that is a process that happens in the government. But as somebody in the church, what I need to speak to is that however that happens, however that is arranged, that it be done with compassion and understanding and with the knowledge that we are dealing with fellow children of God, fellow beloved children of God.
Yes. Reverend Megan Owens, Pilgrim Congregational Church, your thoughts on that?
So I feel compelled, Lynn, because you said legal and illegal immigrants, and I had a somatic reaction to put my State Department brat hat on for a minute and speak to that, because I think that we pretend because we want to devalue and value certain people based on what we think their status might be. We pretend that we educate people in this country on the process of immigration and refugees and asylum seekers. And the fact is that to seek asylum in the United States legally, you must be present. You must present yourself to an officer at the border. And there is a specific process that happens where if one has family somewhere else, depending on the border you come through, you will be sent there with a chit, and the immigration office in that area will be called and said that, Lynn Fritz is coming. She has a chit for a hearing on this date. Go arrest her if she doesn't show up. And then refugee status happens outside the country. There's no line. Congress has not created a line. And there's no one process. And there are people right now, in particular, who are being arrested and detained and deported, who have been in this country, followed the legal process, but they're what's called undesignated, which means they applied for asylum 20 years ago, and we haven't had enough judges to hear the cases, or they keep going to their hearings every year. They're following the process. And then they're arrested.
Which we don't hear conversations about, do we?
But I think we need to.
Yeah.
And I think we need to distinguish between people who are actually a danger, and we need to distinguish between the fact that there are people who come here who are a danger, and there are people who are born here who are a danger. And there's no data that shows that the people that come here are more of a danger than criminals who are born here. I think we just need to have these respectfully have these kinds of conversations, because it's about fear of the other.
Yeah.
What's happening? I think it's a bubbling up of a fear of the other. And just quickly want to echo in my own faith perspective and what I preach is that, biblically speaking, you can't say that God doesn't welcome immigrants.
Yeah.
Especially if you read what Christians call the Old Testament, the Tanakh, the Hebrew Bible. That I think it's over 200 times God says to welcome the immigrant, welcome the stranger, for you yourself was a stranger, that the alien should live among you as a citizen and you should welcome him as such. And I think Jesus echoed that very clearly.
Yes, yes. How about for you, Reverend Tim Garman, Happy Valley Community Church?
The Bible makes it very clear that immigration is it should be a thing. We should be allowed to do that. Obviously, there's country laws that the different countries have their laws in place to protect citizens, just like Megan was saying, from the people who are violent. We have to obey that, too. We do need to go through the process the correct way. The immigrants should, but they absolutely should be welcome here. God's kingdom doesn't have any boundaries, right? There's no boundaries whatsoever. So if we're going to go by that, we need to welcome the immigrants. And just like Megan said, the ones who are violent, then yes, go get those folks. But when ICE was detaining people because of the color of their skin without any grounds, then that is a major, major problem. And it got me so upset that I reached out and talked to so many people. It's like, how do I handle this as a pastor? What do I say to the congregation? Where do I draw the line? And I have a cousin who lives basically at Ground Zero in Minnesota. And the stories she was telling me are horrific, and worse than we were ever hearing.
Yeah.
She was scared to go out of her house for weeks on end. Mm-hmm. And she's white. But the terror that was spread across that city, Lynn, is unreal. Mm-hmm. And we just can't sit idle when we see the stuff that is so obviously wrong. I've been to one protest in my entire life. It was over this issue. I went down to one of the things at City Hall, and that's not who I am. That's not my makeup as an individual to go protest, but that one was so bad. It got me off the couch, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that, yes, lots of terror spread throughout that state, but across our nation. I know for myself, I have friends who are born in the U.S., Hispanic, and they're carrying their passport and hoping that if they get stopped, because what you saw was, to me, way over the top. A violence, and that's immigration control or immigration policy? Is that you use violence to contact people and transport them to another country? I mean, it seems outrageous. Seems over the top.
Way over the top.
Yeah, yeah. Megan?
Oh, just echoing that, and my godchildren in Washington, D.C. are Muslim, and their mother, Miriam, was born here, and her husband is a WASP, looks like me, whitey, and but they're brown and Muslim, and ever since January 20th of last year, they're carrying their passports everywhere.
Yeah,
and that might
because
not be
that
good
fear.
Enough. That's the problem.
That's right. Yeah. That's exactly.
They may have that passport, but they still may get detained for days
exactly.
on end, and that's it's wrong.
There was a man in Florida who was detained who had his birth certificate, but there was some loophole in the law in Florida that he still had to go to ICE detention, and the judge was like, sorry, there's a law here, this doesn't matter. His birth certificate that he was born in Florida.
Yes.
So that's just wrong,
and it's created a lot of fear and terror throughout the nation. And I mean, I know people in this community that are very mindful where they go and when they go, even though they're carrying their passport. So it has had a ripple effect. And when you hear about fake news, you know, that term fake news, and you hear leaders, you can fact check and they're not telling the truth. Telling those lies has a ripple effect into our culture, creating mistrust. And so when you come across that as an individual, but certainly as a faith leader, I mean, how... You want to teach people more about media literacy, about how to fact check things. What comes up for you about all this? Who wants to answer that first? So, Reverend Tim Garman.
Well, sorry, what was the question again?
The question is, there are leaders, political leaders, other leaders that are telling lies and talking about fake news. It creates an atmosphere of mistrust, not knowing what is true and what is not true. So what do you as a faith leader say to your community about not only the conditions happening across the U.S., but as individuals, how should we show up? Should we be promoting lies?
Absolutely not. We do not need to promote lies. And in fact, social media is full of lies, post after post after post. And when I see those lies come across there, and you see them often, I urge people, please go back and fact check. please go back and fact check, because you might be wrong. I don't necessarily tell them they're 100% wrong, even though I know they are. I will tell them, you might be wrong. Just go back and fact check that and give me your sources. We need to open up that dialogue to the conversation to get to the truth.
Yes. Bob?
When I preach, I am in the habit of making my sermons available to people. We have some people who are hard of hearing, and so I've taken to printing out sermons. I've taken to adding footnotes to my sermons in recent months. And if I'm addressing something in the pulpit that I sense that somebody will have some sort of objection to, or say that's not what I heard, or so on and so forth, I will say from the pulpit, and I have citations for that. I can tell you exactly where I got it. There are some times where in my framing, I have had to ignore some lies that are happening because they are, you know, it's the problem of the Gish Gallop, where there are so many lies being told that if I were to spend my time rebutting every one of them, I would never have a positive message to share. And so I pick my battles. When Renee Good was killed, I did not address the video because I found that people could watch the video and, depending on their partisan stance, come away with two completely different ideas of what happened in the video. And so I chose to say, I am not going to address this. Instead, I'm going to address what this administration official said. And so I could point to a direct quote and address the quote to figure out, you know, figuring out which part of the assembled lie is the best to address to reveal the falsity of the entire argument, because these lies are not simply to lie. They're put together for a reason. They're put together to create a different narrative. And so how can I address the greater falsity in the most efficient way?
Yes. I'm going to do a station break. When we come back, we're going to hear from Reverend Megan Owens from Pilgrim Congregational Church. If you just joined us, this is a segment of Enjoy Exceptional Living. I am Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. This program is in collaboration with Enjoy Magazine, KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio, and myself. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. Our guests today are Reverend Tim Garman, Happy Valley Community Church, Reverend Megan Owens, Pilgrim Congregational United Church of Christ, Reverend Bob Schwartz, St. James Lutheran Church, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. And they're all three pastors of a community. I'm an ordained minister with the Centers for Spiritual Living, a New Thought Tradition. So, Megan, coming back to you.
Yeah, I echo everything that Tim and Bob said. From the pulpit, well, I mean, when you first mentioned this, I was thinking about Pilate. What is truth? As a theological question, what is truth? And so I think in my preaching, yes, when I mention something that has happened that I'm speaking to, I will sort of say, you know, as I read in this source, and if people want to know, they can know, but they've usually already read it. And three others besides in my congregation. And I also, in my preaching, try to encourage people to tend to voices they may not listen to. What are the voices that we as a system don't hear? Those may be the voices that we need to hear, because truth is interpretive. An event happens, and our perspective interprets it, no matter how objective we want to be or think we're being. Just as Bob was mentioning about the video, that depending on where people were coming from, they were bringing that to their interpretation of the video. I think we all bring that to our interpretation of what is truth. So it's an intentionality that I try to encourage in my congregation to think about what they consider is truth and why.
Yes. Tim.
Real quick, I want to comment here. I've actually given a sermon in the past where we talked about some of the social media stuff and the lies that come across there. I actually read some posts I'd found online to the congregation, and they were shocked at what they were hearing. Then I told them, they all knew it was a lie, every single person in the room. I told them where I found it from, and it was from Christian friends online that I actually know. They were just aghast to understand that. And that, I use that as a lesson as to we need to research the truth. We need to find the truth. You can't just go share a social media post that you saw somebody else share. And I'm guilty. I've done that in the past myself. And somebody's called me out, and I went back and researched it, and I apologized and took it down. I think we all need to be open to that, open to exploring when somebody's calling us out and telling us, hey, maybe that's not accurate. We need to set that example as leaders, but it's also okay to ask our people to research and do the same.
And don't you think it's the responsibility of political leaders when they make a statement that they have that statement accurate?
100%. It better be accurate, yes.
Yes, yes. Megan.
Yeah. So I just wanted to piggyback on what Tim was saying about social media, because I think he's correct. And I also think one of the really insidious things about social media lying is that it's often a half truth. So it feels like a truth. So it's a lying, it's a extremist lie interpretation of something that may have happened, or half of something that kind of did happen. And you know, as Tim was saying, we need to encourage people to dig deeper. And there was something else I was thinking, but I forgot. So it's fine.
Well, you know, I think all of us agree social media has lots of pitfalls. It has the value of bringing community together. But when the shared information is not accurate, that is troublesome. I find it more challenging when I hear leaders, whether it's a faith leader or a political leader, they have a greater responsibility. I mean, why aren't they accountable? Who's not speaking up, and who's going to speak up and say this is not okay? Megan?
So thank you, Lynn, because I remember what I was thinking is that I also think leaders have an ethical responsibility to say, whoa, I misinterpreted that. Whoa, that was not what actually happened. But there's this myth now that growth or being accountable is considered weak. So we just see a lot of doubling down into the lie because they don't want to be leaders don't want to be considered weak. So there's no accountability at all.
Yes. Bob.
I think that this discussion about social media and moving into what leaders are saying are actually one and the same. Because we do have, you know, for the first time, we have a government that is extremely online. And social media is a way that these lies or half-truths get sanitized, cleaned up, and presented by leaders as a supposedly accurate description of what is happening. It begins online. It then moves its way into the media ecosystem, and then it is picked up by our extremely online government. And in that way, what begins as a social media extreme-sounding lie becomes what sounds like an official pronouncement of fact from the government.
Yes. And I want to also talk about, you see all the tension. I've had people say, I used to be friends with such and such. We are no longer friends because their political views are in contrast or oppose mine. Or the tension building to where I've heard people say, I hate that group of people, or I hate that person. And I'm thinking of the role of faith, how do you deal with that? I mean, who's appropriate to hate and not hate? I'm a student of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. So he talked about this nonviolence resistance as a way of creating social change. To me, this quote, so I want you to think about what I just commented on in this quote. Nonviolence means avoiding, which was for social change. Nonviolence means avoiding not only external physical violence, but also internal violence of spirit. You not only refuse to shoot a man, but you refuse to hate him. So who wants to start us off?
That's a beautiful quote, right? Because hate is such a terrible, strong word. And I just wish it wasn't even in our vocabulary. Because again, we're called to love one another. I just don't understand why people have such a hard time with that. I know that the times are tough and things are weird out there, but we got to get past the hate. We have to just start being able to have a civil conversation. And I don't know, it's just maybe we're not raising our kids to be able to have that conversation with religion or politics anymore. Maybe we feel like, no, we don't believe that way. We can't have a conversation with so-and-so. And we need to have those conversations, because if we can't have the conversations, then the hate's going to stick around. So somehow we got to find a level of respect for somebody we don't agree with, right? That shouldn't be that hard, but yet it seems to be impossible.
Yes. Bob?
I think that I will tell you a little bit about my internal struggle, because what some people think of as political are things that I consider moral or ethical, theological, whatever word you want to put on it. And it is difficult to separate the individual sometimes from that idea. And everybody ends up doing it, because we end up putting people into groups. We end up stereotyping. I think that real encounter with people who are not like us is something that has become more important as we've retreated into our echo chambers. We don't have to meet people who have had different experiences than us, who don't believe the same things as us. And so it becomes easier for us to act and think as if they are less than us, less than human. And to be able to create spaces where we encounter people who are different. And that's part of the problem today, to me, for the churches, I think, speaking on behalf of a church that is the whitest denomination in America, because we've... Are you the whitest denomination
probably,
in America now?
Probably.
But I think that the issue then is we don't get to have that experience. And as churches, isn't that the place where the experience should be happening or should be facilitated? The one place where we're not guaranteed to meet people who are exactly like us. And yet, that's the very place where we're struggling because of our retreating into echo chambers. The church should not be another echo chamber.
So how do we get out of there?
That's a really good question.
How do we beat that? I mean, we're all created in his image. Every single one of us, whether it's a far-right Republican, a far-left Democrat, a black person, a white person, we are all created in his image. So why do we hate each other?
Differences. Something that's different feels a threat.
So we got to go. We got to get past it.
We do.
We have to, Lynn.
And to me, that's hopefully the role of faith is that we help people bridge those differences. And the message from faith is that we are all created in the image and likeness of or something greater than ourselves, and that as we come together, we can have respect for those differences and learn from those differences. Don't you think? I mean, isn't that the role of faith?
Absolutely.
And we say church in this conversation because you're three Christian ministers, but it is all faith communities. all faith communities, and I go to different ones on a regular basis, I never hear them teaching hate. I hear them teaching love. And so I think it's powerful to be able to promote that. I think it needs to be held up more than any other time, I think, in our history as a nation. I think it's critical. Megan, did you want to offer any comment further?
Yeah, my internal struggle, I have two, is the idea that what we're seeing, government violence against certain populations, hatred, this kind of fracturing, that it's new. It's not new.
Right.
It's a sort of our chickens, our own foundations are coming home to roost in a foundation from our foundations in an extreme way and touching people that it didn't usually touch, like white people, privileged people. And I think I just want to name that there is a strain in our country that, not hate, but just this kind of injustice that some people have experienced more than others. And that's why I try to encourage my congregation to listen to voices that have different experience, because we know that when it's not our experience, we discount it. I wouldn't have done that in that situation. How do you know you've never been in that situation?
Yes.
The other thing that I hear from friends and that I struggle with myself is the cognitive disjunct between someone saying that they love me and then voting for something that harms me. Because the vote and what government does and says hurts people or helps people or tries to create a common good. And so I think you cannot at this, and I know people who have cut off friends and family over politics for that reason, because they're a non-privileged population. They might be gay or black, or they might be an immigrant. And these people that they've cut out of their lives finally don't understand that you cannot vote for something that harms me and claim to love me. Because you're creating a system and a culture that is actively keeping me from living my life. So those are just the thoughts I've been having.
Yes, yes. If you just tuned in, this is a segment of Enjoy Exceptional Living. I am Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. This program is in collaboration with Enjoy Magazine, KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio, and myself. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. We are here in conversation with three individuals from our community. Reverend Tim Garman, who's the pastor of Happy Valley Community Church. Reverend Megan Owens, who's the pastor of Pilgrim Congregational United Church of Christ. And Reverend Bob Schwartz, the pastor of St. James Lutheran Church, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. Anybody else want to follow up? Okay, I'll start with you, Tim.
Yeah, I'm going to go political a little bit, Lynn, and hope that's okay. With the topic of hate, when we have our president spewing hate all day long, every day, on social media and otherwise, it has given a license to his followers to feel the same way. And I know there's a lot of good Christian people out there who are spewing hate. I don't think that's who they really are. I think they're just lost in the moment. They're following Trump maybe more than they are following God. I don't know. I just pray that we get past this. I pray for our president that he can just stop being so mean. Because if we could just start spreading love instead of hate, we would be better. It'd make our jobs as pastors easier instead of so divisive.
Yes. Bob?
I am very thankful, Megan, that you got to this thing that it feels to me like we've been kind of talking around. Yeah. White supremacy and the rights of people who are not white. Because one thing that I have heard from some people is some version of, I'm slightly caricaturing here, where's the sensible center? Where's the center point? What can we agree on? And it raises the question of, well, what's the central point between everybody should have equal rights under the law and have respect for each other and No, they shouldn't.
Interesting time, isn't it?
It is. The fact that we have not only an administration that tells lies or half-truths, but is in many ways the most openly white supremacist administration that we've had in 100 years, is the lies that they tell, the half-truths they tell, are what they have to tell to support white supremacy. And that is a discussion that many people are not ready for, although I've found that some of my white friends who are having trouble now, who are demoralized, who feel very depressed by what is happening, they are in a place where they can hear it, finally. A place where many people have been for a long time, people who are not white. And I think being able to address that and to be able to at least say it openly, that this is being done in service to a certain idea, and an idea that the church should be speaking against. We've all been talking about this idea, even if we haven't been using that terminology. But to be able to begin to address that is, I think, where we have to begin as churches. If we're going to be places of reconciliation, we have to acknowledge that we've been protecting power, if not actively, but with our silence.
Yes. Because listeners are tuning in with not able to see us, my three guests are white. I'm Swedish and Native American. So I think it's kind of the context for your comments, I think, is important to know that that's a fact. I also, because of time, I want us to be able to, I think this whole thing around hate, I having conversations with people that will say, I hate so-and-so or I hate this group. I was so proud of Pope Leo coming up and saying, I'm here and I'm in a mosque and I love these people. I was so proud of him for doing that. I think that's a profound leadership role that I'm hoping all faith traditions are promoting. When are you there? Because we see people gathering across the U.S., around the world, protesting. And so as a faith leader, when you are in a leadership role and people in your community or in our larger community, it doesn't have to be your own community, what's your stance on participating in protest? What do you say? How should a person of faith show up in a protest? So who wants to start with answering that question? You want to start, Megan? Reverend Megan?
So I come from a tradition where some of us wear collars and some of us don't, and I bought collars to wear to protest. I think absolutely. I think there's a peaceful protest kind of thing. You know, I think that showing up to protest injustice is a moral imperative, and I think that. I guess these days there's a risk of being called performative, but for me, there's something behind it. I try to put my money where my mouth is. Full disclosure, kind of grew up going to marches and protests and my church being a voice for justice, even if it was counter to the current political majority place with social issues. So that's who I am. That's how I'm built. I think that it's that faith leaders should speak up in public while being very clear about who they are and their own perspective. And that this is this faith perspective. I have been to faith-based protests in D.C. that were very powerful and I think impactful in their way. And so I think it's important to be a countercultural voice, be in the world, not of the world, especially when it comes to countering the cultural hate that has become the patina of our culture.
How about you, Bob?
I do go to protests. I don't go to political rallies, like partisan rallies. And I think that I make that distinction because when I go to a protest, I am protesting certain things that are being done. I don't go as an advocate for a political party. I always love when people at church or in other places try to guess what my personal opinions are about certain things. Because I've lived in very liberal and very conservative places, and it's always fun to hear what people think I am based on what they hear me saying. But I think that protests and there might be the question of how performative it is, but I think there is something to people knowing that they're not alone. There is something to gathering. And I think it also speaks to, I grew up in a time, the 80s and 90s, when I think that many people who attended church said, well, society is generally okay. I grew up in a white church. Society is generally okay, and we help people who fall through the cracks or need some help. And people are generally coming to realize, I think, that society is not okay. And protest is one of the ways that we can show people that we don't think it's okay and gives them license to join us or to act accordingly.
Okay. So do you think, Bob, I'm asking you all three of that. I'm going to get Tim's comment also. Do you think protests should be violent or nonviolent, Bob?
I think protests should be nonviolent.
Okay. Megan, what's your perspective?
I think nonviolent.
Okay, we're out of time, so I need to let Tim have his comment.
Okay. Real quick, since we're running out of time. I as one who don't go to protests, other than just the one time, I have just a quick question for Bob and Megan. When you guys go to a protest, do you go as a pastor or as an individual?
Bob?
I go as an individual.
Megan?
I go as an individual, but there are times that I identify myself as a pastor.
If you're wearing a collar.
Okay, thank you. So anyway, back to the question, though. Yes, we need to be able to protest. It is a legal right protected under the Constitution of the United States of America. We need to do it peacefully. I don't think we need to go out there and be violent because that's just going to incite more hatred. But I've had people in my church ask me, should I go to this protest? I always tell them, pray about it. And if the Spirit's leading you to go, then you absolutely need to go. And just keep it peaceful. Realize there's going to be counter-protesters there. Don't let them egg you on into a fight because that's not what you're going for. You're going to spread love.
Amen. Yes.
Amen is right. I want to thank our three guests. We had Reverend Tim Garman, Happy Valley Community Church, Reverend Megan Owens, Pilgrim Congregational United Church of Christ, Reverend Bob Schwartz, St. James Lutheran Church, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. Wonderful topic. We could go on for hours, and maybe we should have you come back and do another program. I want to leave this thought with our listeners and for us, four of us together. While the nonviolent resistor is passive in the sense that he is not physically aggressive toward his opponent, his mind and emotions are always active, constantly seeking to persuade. Notice it says to persuade his opponent that he is wrong. So that's building bridges in my eyes. I want to remind each of us here, our listeners, we want to make this day and every day a day to enjoy exceptional living. Thank you for joining us.